Oscar Podcast Part 1.
The other night, we went to see Sam's play, doing the things that we want to. It was very physical, it held you to the stage, doing the things that he wants to, doing the things that he wants to. The guy's a cowboy from some rodeo, doing the things that he wants to. The girl that once loved him, but now she wants to go, doing the things that she wants to, doing the things that she wants to. The man was bullish, the woman was a tease, doing the things that they want to. They fought with their words, their bodies, and their deeds, doing the things that they want to. When they finished fighting, they exited the stage, doing the things that they want to. I was firmly struck by the way they had behaved, doing the things that they want to, doing the things that they want to. It reminds me of the movies Marty made about New York. Those frank and brutal movies that are so brilliant. True love, meet the raging bull. They're very inspirational.
This year we're talking about 1997. We want to do a quick rundown of a couple of things before that we get into the Oscar year. I know we talked about some things we wanted to talk about. We always forget them, and I always cut them out anyway. But let's try. So what's happening right now in the Oscar race? We were talking in email about Manola Dargis and Blue is the Warmest Color column. We were talking about The Counselor and the divisive reviews of that. And it does seem to be down to, the Best Picture race seems to be down to still 12 Years a Slave versus Gravity. I don't buy that Gravity can win, but Chris Tapley has just proclaimed on Twitter that it's going to win.
It's going to win the whole thing?
Yeah.
That
would be like this time last year saying that Life of Pi was going to win, which might have been a pretty good guess in October last year. But I think it's a different situation with Gravity, because Life of Pi doesn't have the – I think Life of Pi had more had grabbed people in a different way than Gravity does.
Right.
I think Gravity is a good movie and all, but I just don't see it as a Best Picture. It just doesn't grab me that way.
Well, there are a couple of things working against it. One is the hype, because a lot of people that I know that see it, some of them really love it, but a lot of them go, really? That? You know, what am I missing? Why isn't that? I didn't think that was a good movie. So there's a little bit of backlash to the praise, which always happens, and sometimes a movie can withstand it, sometimes it can't. That's why you never want to be a front runner early on, because it sets up expectations way too high. It's always better to go into a movie thinking it's not going to be that good and be surprised by how good it is than to go in thinking, oh, it's a masterpiece, it has the best reviews of the year, it's going to win Best Picture, and then you go, oh, really, that? But the biggest problem it has is it only has two cast members, and the Academy tends to favor movies with, in fact, 100% of the time, with big casts. You know, the more actors in the movie, the better.
Yeah, and I think just in general, they go for more traditional movies. This would be such an unlikely precedent to set all at once. Was written in so many different ways, the number of actors and the setting and the style. It doesn't seem like a Best Picture, traditional Best Picture winner in any way. It's the first time for everything, of course, but it doesn't seem likely to me.
And isn't it more of a science fiction film more than anything? It's science fiction?
Or not is it science more fiction? I think it is science, and it's fictional because it didn't really happen, but it's not science fiction in the way that there are aliens or traveling to other galaxies or something
right,
like that.
Right, right.
It's fiction in a way of something that could really happen. You could almost believe that it could happen, almost.
I think that a lot of people may think it's like could win Best Picture. I think only because of it's the way it's structured. I mean, the look of the film is incredible. I mean, it's an incredible film to watch on the big screen. I mean, but for the limited cast, only two actors really, maybe three, the guy who dies prior. But I just don't see the Academy going against what they usually do and vote this film as the Best Picture with such a limit. I think basically because of the limited cast in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. I saw the movie and I thought it was a really good movie, but I just don't see it as a Best Picture win. I just don't see that happening.
Are there any other? What would be a third? What would be the third most likely choice? Do you think, Sasha?
Well, I just think it's too early to say right now, because there's some really big movies we still haven't seen, like American Hustle, Wolf of Wall Street, Saving Mr. Banks, Philomena, mm-hmm. but you know they're going against 12 Years a Slave, and I don't find the arguments against 12 Years and a Slave. 12 Years and a Slave, 40 Acres and a Mule, and 12 Years and a Slave. I don't find the arguments against that movie to be strong enough or valid enough. Like, you know, I, unfortunately, people are going to look at me like they always do when I stand behind a movie that isn't going to win, like Lincoln, or The Social Network, and they look at me and they go, she doesn't know what she's talking about. Because she wants, you know, she's going to try to sell the Oscar narrative that she wants. And the thing is Lincoln being a boring movie and people just didn't like it, that's a valid argument because that means that, you know, it's not going to win. But the 12 Years a Slave isn't that movie. It's not boring. People do like it. People are moved by it. And the only reason I think that people are hesitant to say the Academy will vote for it is because they don't think that they're going to want to watch it during holiday season, that they're going to be too, you know, too big a pussies, all of them, to, you know, actually sit through a movie that they know is going to be hardcore and depressing. And that's partly true, but that didn't stop Hurt Locker from winning. So,
mm-hmm. And Hurt Locker Hurt Locker and 12 Years a Slave have the thing in common that they would be milestones in two different ways. Hurt Locker, of course, because it was the first movie by, directed by a woman to win Best Picture, mm-hmm. and 12 Years a Slave, just because of the weight of the importance of a movie like 12 Years a Slave. That doesn't always work. It didn't work for Saving Private Ryan. It didn't work for Lincoln. But I think in this case, it will be really hard for people to not think about that when they're voting.
I think it will be hard for them this year of all years because it's the first year that the Academy has taken on a black president, female president. Mm-hmm. It's the first year that they've tried to actively diversify their membership, not only with the new members that they brought in, but the like agenda, overriding agenda for the year. And the fact that we have three strong black filmmakers in the race this year, that's Lee Daniels, Steve McQueen and Ryan Coogler, and to ignore such an unprecedented year, such an unprecedented inclusion in the Oscar race I don't see it. I don't see them being that daft.
But you know, the thing is, I think we forget sometimes, and I'm not even sure that it's true, but it does seem like when you're in the privacy of your own home and you're voting on your ballot, nobody knows what you voted for unless you tell your other best friend in the Academy, and they're not going to spread it around either. So they are going to vote the way that they feel like that they want to vote when they're sitting in their bathroom or their dining room at home. And I don't know that they really always think so much about the Academy's reputation or how it's going to look to the public or what it's going to. Or they maybe think that other people are going to take care of that. That other people will worry about that, and they don't have to.
Well, you know, that's the thing is that I think that they will vote for making history. Like the closest you can come to an argument that the Chris Tapley and Ann Thompson are making is Brokeback versus Crash. You know, they just King's Speech versus Social Network. But what they're saying there is that people just didn't watch Brokeback, which a lot of them did not. or didn't like it or weren't prepared to evolve forward and appreciate the film's message. They liked Crash better. Even now, a lot of times, if you catch people off guard who don't know anything about the Oscar race and you mention the two movies, they will say Crash is the better movie, either because they didn't see Brokeback or because Crash is just the more general audience crowd pleaser, right? The difference between that and this is that, you know, where Gravity might be a general audience crowd pleaser, it doesn't have any kind of gravitas like Crash did, even like Argo did. It doesn't have any, like, importance, quote-unquote. And it's not really a general audience crowd pleaser as much as you'd think. That would have been Monuments Men, I thought, or it might be American Hustle. That's the thing about 12 Years is that it's got a free and clear path to win. There is no, like, I don't think there is an Argo lurking in the woodpile, not that I've seen. Nebraska is a movie that all the readers keep saying, Nebraska, Alexander Payne, isn't it? And I don't know why that campaign is so quiet. I really don't. But that is a movie, of all the movies I've seen, that could challenge 12 Years a Slave, because it is a general audience crowd pleaser. It's black and white, and it's directed by Payne, and it's weird. But it has a Frank Capra-ish ending to it that a lot of people are going to love universally once they start seeing the movie.
It has an emotional resonance, which is something that Gravity, as entertaining as a film as it is, it doesn't hit you where you live and leave you feeling anything necessarily, other than the exhaustion of the visceral impact of actually watching it. And as a technical thing, it's amazing and it's fun to watch, but it's not something, I just can't see it as something that somebody's going to want to say, yeah, that was the best movie of the year.
What you're saying about that, I agree. You're really caught up in the moment, emotional moment of what Sandra Bullock's character is going through. But after the movie, when you know that she's okay, it doesn't leave you a whole lot to think about. There's not anything profound about it that's thought provoking. Right. You're really wrapped up in it emotionally in the moment. But after the moment is over, you can file it away as just something that problem solved.
Exactly.
I realize what 12 Years a Slave reminded me most of, and that was not Schindler's List, but The Pianist, the Roman Polanski movie, which ended up winning, surprisingly, Best Actor, Adapted Screenplay, and Director. I could see that happening with 12 Years a Slave and another film, like Chicago-type film, winning Best Picture, but what's that movie? What's Chicago this year, if there is one?
I don't know. You know, another thing I think that I would think, if I were an Academy member, especially if I were an older Academy member, as most of them are, we know that they are. I think if the Academy thinks of itself as sending a message to the industry or being a representative of the industry, one thing that they might do from year to year that I seem to get a sense that they do is they choose a movie that they say, we would like to see more movies like this. Yes, do this again. We're going to give our stamp of approval to this movie so you will do them again. And the second part of that is that some of the members of the Academy can say to themselves, I could have been in this movie. I could have done that. If someone had called me and I had been cast in that role, I might have been in this movie. And they're not going to think that about Gravity. An 80-year-old lady is not going to see herself in a spacesuit, you know, in orbit. She's just not.
Right.
She's not going to be able to think that she's not going to say, I wish they would make more movies like Gravity. Maybe I'll get a call, you know?
Well, yeah, I don't know if she would think that. She might think that because it's an older woman in the role, but I would think that what you're talking about with Chicago and The Artist and Argo and movies like that, you're talking about movies that thousands and thousands of people can agree that they like. And none of us on this microphone or in this podcast can really be considered among that kind of consensus vote. But there are people, like, look at your Facebook friends. I know, Ryan, you're not on Facebook, but take all your Facebook friends and say, what movie could I recommend to all my Facebook friends that I know they would like? You know that was Argo. You know that was The Artist. You know that was A King's Speech. You know that was Chicago. These are movies that are, what do you call it? They're just textbook crowd pleasers, you know, that anybody's going to like. And now there are exceptions to that rule. There's The Hurt Locker, which I know for a fact wasn't that movie the year that Avatar was expected to. Avatar is like Gravity. Avatar is Gravity, and 12 Years a Slave is Hurt Locker. And the thing is that people were staring down the nose and making history. How delicious to award a woman getting that, you know, all she had to do was, like, edge close enough to the wind for them to taste it, to taste history, you know,
and that's what's happening. The weight of the critical the critical weight behind it, the critics' approval and all of the precursors and everything, too, just did everything to support her along the way.
They really did, but and they're going to, I believe that they, she's not, you know, Steve McQueen is no Catherine Bigelow in terms of being sweet and charming, but I think that he, I think he'll get a lot of help along the way. I could see there being a split vote, but like I said, and like we all keep saying, where's the Chicago? Where's the Argo? What is that movie this year? So far, the only one I've seen that comes close to that is Nebraska, and nobody seems to agree with me that I work with or in our field. Nobody is also saying that, but it's the only one I can see so far doing that. That's why 12 Years a Slave has such a good, clean path to victory.
I sort of avoided trying to read anything about Saving Mr. Banks, although I know a lot of people did see it. Were people a little bit disappointed or not? Do they still think it stands a good chance?
I'm just holding off talking about it, I think, because I didn't see it. I only know Jeff Wells' opinion and a couple of women that tweeted me about it, and it was very divided. I think already it comes with too much baggage to win because they're already going on and on about how Disney, you know, wouldn't let them show Walt smoking and Walt was died of lung cancer. He smoked so many cigarettes and stuff like that. You know, it just, it has a little bit of baggage. I don't know what it is. I'm totally reserving judgment on it. I don't feel like it has that it's going to win thing. I don't know why the resistance to 12 Years a Slave from different people. I don't know why the resistance. It was clear when I saw it in Telluride that it was a very powerful, undeniable film. You know, yes, depressing, yes, hard-hitting, but, you know.
It might be the kind of movie that actually benefits from being on a screener because movies tend to be a little less intense that way. And I think Hurt Locker benefited that way because it's almost unbearable to watch in the theater. But to have on the TV, it's much more approachable. And I think that's another area where Gravity's going to fall flat. It's not going to be nearly as impressive on TV as it was in a theater.
Well, you know, I haven't seen 12 Years a Slave, but all I can say from what I've heard about it is that it's definitely, from the Academy's point of view, their vision of slavery was Gone with the Wind. You know, that is like the favorite film of all time. And so to see something like 12 Years a Slave, it changes the topic of conversation into what slavery was really about. So say that film won. Okay, you'll have two films about slavery. You have 1939's Gone with the Wind, which had this sort of nice slaves, good slaves that were actually happy to be slaves, compared to 12 Years a Slave, which was a completely different, diverse film, which actually got into the heart of slavery.
Right, right.
You know? And exactly. So I think that's – and maybe that is where the Academy might be divided because they have, you know, especially the older Academy members, they may be divided in that respect because you have this beloved film, Gone with the Wind, and then you have this hard-hitting film which actually depicts slavery the way it was.
Yeah, and they feel like a lot of people, you know, older white gentlemen, feel that they don't want to know anymore. They already know. They feel guilty. They feel bad. It's over. Why bring up slavery? But, Michael, you're exactly right because what 12 Years a Slave does is it's not so much about slavery. It's about Hollywood's depiction of slavery, which is shameful in and of itself. And here's a movie that totally upends that. Now, it's true that it's challenging and that it's going to be tough for voters. But you know what? People said the same thing about The Departed. They said the same thing about No Country. And they said the same thing about The Hurt Locker. And I believe that we've sat through enough of these milquetoast winners to finally have a really good Best Picture winner.
It does seem like it's almost cyclical, doesn't it? They make a really smart choice, and then for 3 years or 4 years in a row, they make some really bland choices. But then they come back around and they realize that they've been overlooking such great films that they need to reestablish their credibility again.
Maybe, or maybe they just vote for what they like. I don't know.
Yeah, and it depends on every year. It depends on what else a movie is up against. Yeah. I mean, you would have thought that when we talked about The Color Purple, that The Color Purple might have been a movie that they would have really gone for. Although it's nothing to do with slavery because it's 100 years after slavery, or it takes place, you know, in the early 20th century. But it still was something about the black experience that had never been seen before, that never been depicted before, and to that degree, to that. epic extent, you know?
With Gravity.
Well, maybe 12 Years a Slave will split the vote. You know, like what happened with Crash and Brokeback. Brokeback, I mean, got what? Best Director. Maybe 12 Years a Slave could get Best Director, but not Best Picture. It could be maybe an acting and a director, maybe a screenplay, but it probably won't get the Best Picture because maybe it is too harsh for the Academy members.
Right, but what lighter. Movie is it, though, Michael? That's what I was saying earlier, is like, if there was a Crash in the Woodpile or a Chicago, because it does remind me of The Pianist, so it could win actor, screenplay, and director, and not win picture, and Chicago-esque movie could win. But what is that movie? It's not Gravity. Gravity's a movie that rests entirely on Sandra Bullock's performance, and if you're not down with Sandra Bullock in that movie, you're not going to like Gravity. You know, it's all about her. So I don't know that she... Maybe if it was Meryl Streep, and not even then... You know, traditionally, they like movies with a lot of actors, and women like movies with men, and you know, men like women with hotties, and they all like movies that employ a lot of actors and a lot of, you know, different... The tech people can't win Best Picture, but the actors drive the Best Picture race. They always have. So, you know, you're going to pick... there's another movie out there, actually, that nobody's talking about because the critics have totally poo-pooed it. It is by a black director. It has a huge cast. It's incredibly cathartic. It's a general audience crowd pleaser. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Yeah, give that man a CR.
That's the one I think is going to win. That's my pick.
Well, there you go.
Until I see something else that asserts itself. I mean, it's stupid to pick right now, but that's, you know, it pushes all the buttons.
And nobody's thinking of it because we're still stuck in kind of the critic snobbery of it all. And anybody would laugh at you, Chris Tapley and Ann Thompson and all of them, they would laugh at you if you ever said that. But in the context of what we're all talking about, where we're looking for that one movie that hits all the right notes, that's the fucking movie. And it's Weinstein Co.
And it has a respectable box office, too.
Yeah. Totally.
More than respectable.
Well, it'll probably get Best Picture. It'll probably get a lot of nominations. I'm pretty sure, because if it's Weinstein, he's going to make sure that film is not going to be forgotten.
Just saying. You guys, you listeners, you heard it on Oscar Podcast first. We did the math and we came up with the following. So, right, Craig? I mean, come on. It's like... It's a general audience crowd pleaser. It's a black black American director who's the only black director who's ever been nominated for picture and director. It stars Oprah Winfrey, for God's sake, and a huge ensemble cast of SAG members, people like Jane Fonda and John Cusack. I mean, it's incredible the reach of all of the star power in that movie, just that movie alone, plus Weinstein.
If there's anyone who hasn't seen it yet in the Academy, it is the movie that you would conceivably show to the family over the holidays, too.
Totally. Absolutely. That's the one you could put on and say, that is the one I could show all my Facebook, except the snobby critics. They're the only ones who...
That's the thing, is they're in their little snobby critic bubble where Gravity is the greatest movie ever made, and The Butler is sort of the cheesy crowd pleaser. But, you know, that's what's going to put it over, because...
One thing I think the critics do, which I have to sort of, I mean, and we probably agree too, that as far as directorial flair and the tour de force, Gravity is it, much more so than The Butler. Lee Daniels erases a lot of his usual style in The Butler, I think, and makes him one of the most traditional movies he's ever made, which is fine. And there's a lot more to directing a movie than fancy flourishes. It's getting the performances and getting the pacing and everything right, which he does.
I know. I loved The Butler. Sobbed hysterically. And we'll just have to see how it goes. I'm curious to see what hand. A lot of these studios are playing their poker hand close to their vest. Paramount with Nebraska, right close to the vest. Weinstein Co. with The Butler, totally hush-hush, absolutely quiet, dead quiet. And they know what they've got. And they know they've got a movie that's made over $100 million that stars Oprah Winfrey as a black director. They know it. And probably somewhere Harvey Weinstein's going, 12 Years a Slave is never going to win. But let them think it's going to win, you know. So we'll see what happens when they unleash their power. We'll see. And Fox Searchlight has 12 Years a Slave. And nobody does publicity like Fox Searchlight. Remember the Little Miss Sunshine bus and all they did for Juno? I mean, come on. So... When they you know, open the floodgates and the real race starts, we will see what could happen with Best Picture.
And I want to see the 12 Years a Slave bus.
The 12 love it. Don't even go there, Craig. Not even with a joke.
It's going to happen.
Oh, my God. I can't even make a joke about it. It's too offensive, any joke that's popping into my head right now. Oh, my God. But, yeah. Okay. Moving on.
Remember, as long as we're talking about studios and studios trying to know how to play their poker hand, American Hustle is Columbia. If American Hustle, by some stretch of the imagination, wins Best Picture, it would be the first time that Columbia has had a Best Picture winner since 1982, yeah. Since Gandhi.
Wow.
They just have not had anything for the past three decades, really.
Yeah. See, the problem I have with American Hustle and with Wolf of Wall Street being thought of as winners is that, you know, they're dark movies about dark people up against movies about hardcore heroes, you know, the mm-hmm. Butler, and the Butler ends with Obama, for God's sake. I mean, and oh. You know, and Fruitvale Station and 12 Years a Slave, I mean, and even Gravity, these are movies that are about what the Academy likes, which is movies that depict the best sides of humanity, and they don't often go, the only reason they went with The Departed was because it was Scorsese, you know.
Mm-hmm. Captain Phillips too is one of those movies Captain that shows Phillips. The best in humanity, and has a and after putting you through hell, it pulls you out and makes you feel really relieved at the end of that movie. You feel great about Captain Phillips himself and the way he.
Absolutely love that movie. It's a really good one. It's just it's going to be a hard year for any film campaign to top what's going on with The Butler and 12 Years a Slave. In my opinion, feel free to ridicule us all you want. Podcast listeners, we know you're going to, but we're prepared. We're totally prepared.
You know, Captain Phillips, that could be that Crash, do you think? Captain Phillips?
Well, maybe. It's not really Crash, but maybe.
But it is a crowd pleaser. It really tugs at you towards the end, at the end. It really does. It you know, does. It's one of those films that has a uplifting ending.
It really does. I remember when I saw Crash for the first... Because I always have to try to remember my first reaction to a movie before I get sunk into Oscar season. I start hating every movie that isn't the one I want to win. But I remember watching Crash, standing up and watching it at the end. And it really did make me, like, grab my heart and, like, cry. So it did... But so did Brokeback, for God's sake. But
Sasha, I remember you and I were talking about that year, and I said to you months ago, before the Oscar, I said Crash was going to win. It was a Hollywood-produced film in Hollywood, one of the rarest films produced in Hollywood. And I said, Sasha, it's going to win. I said, they're not going to give it to Brokeback. You said, no. And I'm always right about that. I knew that film was going to win.
You knew Argo was going to win, too.
I knew Argo was going to win.
So, all right, fine. So what's going to win this year, Michael? Smarty Pants?
Well, I haven't seen 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah.
I've seen Captain Phillips. I've seen Gravity. And all the other films you talk about haven't come out yet, like Nebraska and Something Hustle and stuff like that. Yeah. But, you know, every year, everyone thinks a certain film's going to win, and it always is the film that no one expects to win. That's what's been happening lately. It's like the film no one expects to win. Right. So, I mean, I hear you guys talking about all these films and 12 Years a Slave, but I just kind of feel that it's probably going to be a surprise film that no one expected to win is going to win.
The Butler!
You know? Well, you know, with The Butler is that they had the help already. You know, they already had the help. So, I mean, The Butler is a good movie and all, but I think maybe Academy members think, well, we just already had the help. That talked about, you know, the 60s and all that stuff. So is The Butler any different from The Help?
Yeah, very different.
Yeah, a lot different. But for one thing, it's not the white people don't save the day in the Butler.
Yeah. Mm. Right. The white people don't save the day. It's not about the white people. It's a 100% story told from an African-American point of view. And it's great. I mean, in that mm-hmm. way, you know, I know it's not a great film, but it's like Forrest Gump. I mean, it's in its own way. It's a historical epic.
Well, all I can say with this year's Academy is that I hope that they don't ignore the minority part of, you know, I think with a lot of the black people that have been in films this year and with the directors and the powerful films that came out, I just hope they're not ignored. That's all. I hope that it'll be more fair-based Academy Award, where we'll be seeing a lot more integration with nominations. That's all. I would love to see that. That's what we need.
If they make the mistake and totally somehow blunder and manage to ignore these three or four fantastic movies by black filmmakers this year, the traffic after the Oscars will be more than the traffic leading up to the Oscars.
It'll be like, I can see it. I could see it happening as one of the great blunders of all time. Like you could just be totally racist about it and say they cancel each other out. But, yeah, no. The thing is a lot of the movies that we all thought were going to be big players have moved to the next year, like Monuments Men and Foxcatcher. So, and there's more than five Best Picture slots. So there's no way. I mean, if anything, Ryan Coogler, and he'll still get nominated for screenplay, but, I don't know. It's original screenplay is really competitive this year, but I would think of the three, Fruitvale Station will be the one that drops off.
You know, they need to open. I beat this to a dead horse, but I think with the more Best Picture nominees now, I think they should be more lenient with screenplays and stuff like that. If there's a sixth film that has a great screenplay, just throw it in. Forget about the whole five. They need to unlimit the field. So if there's like six films that have great screenplays that can be nominated, then go ahead and nominate it. I mean, that's what they should do. Just break away from that five thing and just say if there's six or whatever, do that. And that's what they need to do. Just open up the field.
Yeah. Right.
That'll probably never happen, but I do think it's silly to just have an arbitrary number of five or even ten. It's just like, are we cavemen where we look at our fingers on our hands and that's how we still do things, by how many fingers we can count? It's like...
Right. But last year was a good year to have more than five because there were so many strong contenders for Best Picture. This year, it feels like there are two, but they're like littler movies than they were last year. Last year, they were all mainstream big studio movies doing really well and making lots of money, and that was unusual. This year, it's more like the independents are back. You know, the smaller movies are back, but they're all really, really good.
Well, isn't it now with the Best Picture field that they can either go from 7 to 10, right? Is that how it is now, from 7 to 10?
I think anything between 5 and 10.
Between 5 and 10. Yeah. Yeah.
But you think that they're going to be 10 this year?
I don't think it's mathematically possible, but everybody seems to assure me that it is. In the years that they had, that they used this method, which was picking between 5 and 10, they never got to 10. The most they ever got to was 9. I suppose it's possible, but if any year was going to do it, it would have been last year.
No, the first 2 years they got 10.
Because it was a strict 10 that year. It wasn't. Yeah. Yeah, because there was no variation those 2 years.
I think the third year it was 9.
I'm talking about the new process, which is that
that's right. They changed the process again.
Yeah.
That's right.
It goes first. It went from 10. They did 2 years of 10, where Academy members were asked to submit 10 choices. So that allowed them to be more free with their picks. That was how Winter's Bone got in, and The Kids Are All Right, and movies like that. You know, that might not have made it. Now what they do is it's between 5 and 10. And the Academy members only submit 5. So they're picking 5 of their favorite movies of the year. And they all have to have a certain number of number one votes. So you're not going to get in unless you're a lot of people's number one favorite movie. You know? And then if you are, then you're going to get in. That's why passion tends to rule in the Best Picture race. Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close got in, was because it was based on emotion. That's all.
Yeah, it's really hard to think of more than five movies this year that would be so many people's number one choice on their ballots. You know, as many movies, there are a lot of great movies this year. We've talked about what a great year from films this is. It's hard to imagine that a substantial number of the Academy would say Dallas Buyers Club is their number one movie of the year.
I know,
it's just
right?
Not going to happen.
It doesn't seem like it, but it might be. It might end up being. It's just that it feels very quiet out there. Like the campaigns are very, very quiet. So a movie like All Is Lost, which is pushing on the gas hardcore, might get in because their campaign is so strong. That might actually get in for Best Picture because they are really, really pushing it hard. Gravity will get in for sure. 12 Years a Slave will get in for sure. Inside Llewyn Davis will have no problem. I think Nebraska has a really good shot. Because, you know, walking around Telluride, people would talk about two movies that they saw that they loved, and it was Nebraska, usually, and Gravity. What's funny is that when Chris and Anne are predicting Gravity to beat 12 Years a Slave, it's like, well, why didn't it beat it at Toronto? Why wasn't it the audience favorite, Gravity, at Toronto? If it, the two movies back-to-back. Seems like, but I know the Silver Linings won and beat Argo there, but anyway, blah, blah, blah. We should get on to the year. I'm going to have to cut a lot of that out that we just said, but that's okay. We forgot to talk about Lou Reed, and we need to talk about Lou Reed because Lou Reed just died, and we promised some people. Did anybody read the comments on the podcast thing? I know that one guy asked us to spend some time talking about Lou Reed. Does anybody want to do that? I can talk about him because he's like one of my favorites.
You should, Sasha, because I'm not a big – I wasn't very familiar with him, Lou Reed. I knew who he was, but I wasn't a fan.
Well, Lou Reed was a really amazing human being in a lot of ways. He started his career with the Velvet Underground as this kind of crazy androgynous singer. How do you even describe Lou Reed in the Velvet Underground? He was famous for having sung and written heroin because he was a well-known heroin addict. But he was so young back then, you didn't really know what Lou Reed was going to end up being capable of. And it really wasn't until he left the Velvet Underground, I don't think, that he became the musician that he was on the day that he died, which was somebody who experimented across all genres and was a poet and an incredible guitarist and has written songs for decades that are just memorable and beautiful, and you really have to dig into his work to find them. He's not as popular as Bob Dylan or Tom Petty or Bruce Springsteen, but he certainly was as influential. And most musicians will say that they owe it all to Lou Reed. You know, I just loved him. I've been playing and listening to his music most of my life, all of my life. And he's one of the first, like, public figures to die where it actually affected me emotionally. I felt like it was a premature. He was only 71. He's still vital songwriter and singer and musician, married to Laurie Anderson, the performance artist and political activist. He just seemed like he was such a giant life force, and he had a lot more in him, a lot more coming, a lot more to do. And he had a liver transplant, which didn't go well, and he was taken out. It was sad day.
I take solace when people like him die that at least we have all the amazing things that they left behind. You know what I mean? It's sad that he's gone, but what a great thing that we have, that he left so much for us to enjoy forever.
Sasha, did he have children that followed him in the music business?
I don't know if Lou Reed ever had kids. I never heard much about his personal life. I just know he ended up with Laurie Anderson and that they became this iconic couple in New York. That was all I knew about his personal life. I did see him in concert a few times. He's just very deadpan, just kind of stands there playing his guitar, looking out at you. But I'll be playing Lou Reed for both bumper music for this podcast, so you'll get to hear a little bit of him if you've never heard him before. But I strongly recommend that everybody go out and listen to everything that Velvet Underground ever did, for sure. But Lou Reed's New York is a really great album to listen to.
Surprising, really, that haven't been any movies that have looked at that era very closely, or he would be a great subject for a biography, you know.
And he wrote a great album called Songs for Drella, which was inspired by and dedicated to Andy Warhol. Also worth listening to.
Of course, didn't he only have one song that went
most popular?
Yeah, that was popular. Was Walk on the Wild Side or something like that?
Yeah, everybody knows
Sweet
that.
Sweet Jane, too.
And Sweet Jane, those are his two big ones. But there are so many great songs that he did. On the album New Sensations, there's a song called Doing the Things That We Want To, and that I love because I quote it a lot on the website because he writes about Martin Scorsese and Sam Shepard, you know, in this song. And he says, I wrote this song because I'd like to shake your hand in a way you guys, the best friends I ever had. And it always struck me that, and I totally would feel that way about him. You know, he'd do anything because he'd like to shake his hand. He just was a genius. So rest in peace, Lou Reed, wherever you are.
You've been listening to part one of Oscar Podcast with Craig Kennedy from livingincinema.com, Ryan Adams and Sasha Stone from awardsdaily.com, and special guest Michael Gray. The bumper music was, of course, dedicated to Mr. Lou Reed, and it opened with Doing the Things That We Want To and closed out with Halloween Parade. Thanks for listening. You can follow us on Twitter at Oscar Podcast. And stay tuned for part two, which delves into 1997.
There's a downtown fair singing out Proud Mary as she cruises Christopher Street. And some southern queen is acting loud and mean where the docks and the badlands meet. This Halloween is something to be sure of. Especially to be here without you. There's a Greta Garbo and an Alfred Hitchcock and some black Jamaican stud. There's five Cinderellas and some leather drags. I almost fell into my mug. There's a Crawford Davis and a tacky Cary Grant. And some homeboys looking for trouble down here from the Bronx. But there ain't no Harry and no Virgin Mary. You won't hear those voices again. And Johnny Rio and Rotten Rita, you never see those faces again. This Halloween is something to be sure of. Especially to be here without you. There's the Born Again Losers and the Lavender Boozers and some crack team from Washington Heights. The boys from Avenue B, the girls from Avenue D, a Tinkerbell and tights. This celebration somehow gets me down. Especially when I see you're not around. There's no Peter Pedantic saying things romantic in Latin, Greek, or Spic. There's no Three Bananas or Brandy Alexander dishing all their tricks. It's a different feeling that I have today. Especially when I know you've gone away. There's a girl from Soho with a t-shirt saying I blow. She's with the Jive 5, 2 plus 3. And the girl for pay dates are giving cut rates or else doing it for free. The past keeps knock, knock, knocking on my door. And I don't want to hear it anymore. No consolations, please, for feeling funky. I gotta get my head above my knees. But it makes me mad, and it makes me sad. And then I start to freeze. In the back of my mind, I was afraid it might be true. In the back of my mind, I was afraid that they meant you. The Halloween Parade. At the Halloween Parade. At the Halloween Parade. See you next year. Wow.